The Holy Grail Body Transformation System, Part 5, Frequently Asked Questions. This section is the newest part of the program. It was made possible by all of our customers that sent me literally hundreds of emails over the many months since the first edition of the program was released. Since this Frequently Asked Questions section was added to the program, I've continued to get tons of great feedback from people who told me it was actually one of their favorite parts of the program and one of the parts they found the most helpful. I think you're going to enjoy this section as well. And I also think you're going to find it extremely thorough, and the chances are good that it's going to answer the vast majority of questions that were already on your mind. However, if you find yourself with more questions and you'd like to see your question answered and added into a future edition of the Holy Grail system, you can send me email from the Holy Grail website at www.holygrailbodytransformation.com. Look for the link at the bottom of the page that says contact. Send me a question and it may just find its way into the next edition of the book, and I'll do my best to reply to you personally by email. Now on with the questions. Question. Tom, in the first part of your Holy Grail ebook, you teach how to categorize goals into four different possibilities. You then go on to say that selecting a goal is easy, but I'm still confused. Please let me explain. I'm a 27-year-old female, 5 feet 6 inches tall. I recently had my body fat measured by impedance analysis, and it said my body fat was 31.7%. I couldn't believe it, but then our class also did a DEXA testing as part of graduate level nutrition class at UC Berkeley. It said I was 33.8% body fat, confirming the first test, only a little bit worse. I only weigh 140 pounds and I'm fairly happy with my body shape, but I know that having body fat over 30% is unacceptable. That's what's confusing me. My goal is to look lean, but I also want to get stronger and gain some muscle. I don't feel like I'm overweight, and my goal isn't really to get thinner, but the tests say I'm definitely over fat. My problem is, now I can't decide what my goal should be. Can you make this decision-making process a little more clear for people like me who are not super overweight nor underweight? Thank you. Answer. If your body fat is 33.8%, then fat loss should definitely be a priority. But if you do the math, you'll calculate that your lean body mass is 92.6 pounds. So you're also right that increasing your lean mass would be a good goal to pursue as well. So gaining muscle and losing fat, body recomposition, is exactly what you need. In your case, however, I would recommend that you take a patient, longer-term, more big-picture approach to achieving that dual type of goal. So I'm just going to repeat the advice that I gave at the end of part one of the program. If you're significantly overweight, choose focused fat loss as your goal, and then consider muscle gain or recomposition goals later. That's where I think some of the confusion might have come in. Choosing a goal may have been easier if I had actually been clearer and said over fat instead of overweight. You're a perfect example of why the weight versus body fat distinction is so important. Because regardless of body weight and regardless of whether you'd like to gain muscle right now, if your body fat percentage is high, I still recommend that you focus on the fat loss first. So that means you should set aside the Holy Grail body recomposition strategies for a little while and start by setting a 12-week focused fat loss goal as your first macro cycle. And then during that time, by staying in a calorie deficit, you'll be able to bring your body fat down to the acceptable or average range as quickly as possible. And that would bring you down from the low 30s to about 25 or 27% body fat or around there, maybe lower if you work really hard and you're ambitious. Once your body fat level is average or better, then you can start a new macro cycle with a goal of fat loss first priority and concurrent muscle gain as a secondary priority. And that's when you'll start using the Holy Grail methods like cycling your calories, taking surplus days during the week, planning out your mesocycles with 3 days low and 1 day high. You'd still be focused at that point on getting leaner, fat loss would be the first priority, but including that one day of surplus calories every fourth day, combined with the weight training and the proper nutrient timing around your workouts, that's going to help increase the odds of you gaining some lean body mass while you continue to get even leaner. Question, Tom. I really enjoyed reading The Holy Grail, and I'm excited to try it out. I appreciated that you talked about hormones, because I have always believed that hormones were a huge part of how our bodies work. That's my problem. I think my stress hormones are out of whack because I don't get enough rest. I work long hours. I have a lot of stress, which I honestly don't manage that well, and I have a tendency for overtraining. I guess I'm a type A personality. The thing is, I really enjoy training and I'm not afraid of hard work. In fact, my time in the gym is like a release for me. My goal is losing fat and gaining muscle, and I'd rather do more training than less. But after reading your book, I'm worried that doing too much cardio may be holding back my gains. Answer. On a focused fat loss program, you could, and a lot of times you have to do more cardio to reach the really low body fat levels or to reach fat loss goals in really short time frames. So knowing how much cardio you should do, it's very much a matter of prioritization of your goals. When gaining muscle is also one of your priorities, like it is on this program, it is important not to overdo the cardio, because too much cardio could interfere with strength and possibly interfere with muscle gains. In extreme cases, it could even decrease your strength or lead to loss of lean body mass. The trick is to know how much cardio is excessive. What we do is look at the research on concurrent strength and endurance training, and it shows that when you go too far beyond 3 days a week, when you're simultaneously doing three or more days a week of weight training, it's possible there could be some compromise in the strength or muscle size. So when you get up to daily cardio, and definitely if you're doing two-a-day cardios, then it's very likely there's going to be a compromise. So it's kind of a catch-22, because while larger amounts of cardio can help you get very low body fat and lean out at the maximum rate, it could cause you to put the muscle gains on hold. There is a good solution in your situation, though. Low-intensity cardio. It's been criticized by a lot of fitness professionals because they favor high-intensity cardio, but there is a place for the lower-intensity work. Some types of cardio, like just moderate to brisk walk, can add up in your daily calorie burn and in your weekly calorie expenditure. And while the amount of calories burned is nowhere near what you'd get if you did high intensities like interval training, it does add up and it does help with fat loss. The difference is the lower intensity cardio does not threaten to break down muscle tissue, and it doesn't tap into your central nervous system recovery reserves. And by the way, this is probably one of the reasons that large professional bodybuilders often do the treadmill walking as their choice of cardio before contest. It's because they know that's not going to chew up their muscle, and it doesn't use up valuable nervous energy that could be directed to the more important muscle building weight training workouts. Some types of light activity, you could actually look at them as restorative in nature, and you could consider them a form of active recovery. So if you can find some type of light activity that's enjoyable and relaxing, you might actually find it helps with the stress release. Like if you have, say, hiking trails in the hills or woods or a beach nearby, that's a perfect example. You might find some other activities. For some people, it's things like yoga that could keep you active physically and burn a few more calories every week, but actually decrease the stress response. So to sum it up, keep your formal cardio, the moderate and intense stuff that you would actually consider a real cardio workout, keep that to about 3 days a week, but go ahead and add in some lower intensity activity the other days and the rest of the week so you get some additional calories burned. It'll satisfy your urge to stay active and possibly even help relieve more stress. So stay active, just manage the intensity and the energy expenditure. Question, Tom, you mentioned eating more after training, or even before and after training, but you also mentioned eating more on training days for the whole day. You only talked about it briefly, though, when you were talking about floating or targeted high carb days. It seems to me that staying in line with your Holy Grail principles, it would make eating more on the training days and less on the non-training days the ideal method. And that leads me to two questions. First, is there any reason you didn't set this up so that you're always eating more on training days and eating less on non-training days? Second, if I wanted to use this targeted high carb day strategy, what would be the best way for me to do it? Answer. This is a good question that I've gotten quite a few times. I agree that it may help with muscle growth, not only to do the pre and post-workout nutrition on the training days, but also to consider eating more overall for the entire day on training days. That's what the floating or the targeted high carb days was about. If you eat more on training days, you'll be giving your body more fuel and more building and recovery materials when you need them the most on a training day. So this approach does seem logical and it does fall perfectly in alignment with the Holy Grail program philosophy. But there are a lot of other things to consider first, including how much you need simplicity in your program, what your goals are, your training frequency, the type of training you're doing on a particular day, the time of day you train, your desired weekly calorie deficit, and your weekly calorie budget available. One of the reasons that I still really like the 3 days low, the 1 day high, or the 3 days low and 3 days high in repeating cycles as the standard method for the Holy Grail program is just purely simplicity. If you repeat a cycle over and over again, that's easy to do. There's not very much thinking involved. And it could be as simple as just creating 2 menu plans and rotating them. And I assume that the type of people who are using this program are highly motivated and disciplined enough that they could follow much more complex nutrition programs. But you just can't discount the importance of making your nutrition as practical and easy as possible. If I say eat more carbohydrate calories every 4th day, that's super simple. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So we're trying to keep it simple. That's one of the reasons. If you wanted to eat more on every training day, going to maintenance or a surplus, one other factor that you'd have to think about is your training frequency. What if you train almost every day? For example, bodybuilders often train 5 or 6 days a week because they split up their workouts to the point of hitting only 1 or 2 body parts a day. If they were to eat more on every training day, almost every day would be a high calorie day. And you can't get much fat loss if you're eating at maintenance or in a surplus most of the time. Also, one of our goals with this program is to stay out of a prolonged surplus because it's really hard to avoid gaining some fat if you're in a surplus most of the time. That's the old school bulking method. The Holy Grail is the new and improved model. You also want to consider the intensity and the energy demands of your workout. Energy demanding workouts are like legs, like the days you're going to squat, or back if you're going to do deadlifts and rows. Those kind of workouts take a heck of a lot more out of you than abs, calves, or arms. So it would make sense to put more food and nutrition back in for recovery on those days. If your training split has workout days where you're only doing small body parts, like let's say you have an arm day, biceps and triceps, that's much less energy demanding. It's all isolation work. So it would make sense to take the higher calorie, higher carb days only when the most energy is used, when those big muscle groups and compound exercises are getting trained. But I know a lot of bodybuilders and physique athletes, they've been sold the bill of goods on post-workout recovery drinks, and they chug the same amount of sugary post-workout drinks with every workout. But do you really need all those carbs after training your calves or after training your abs or your forearms? You know, obviously not, because every workout's not equal. If we had a perfect situation, it might make the most sense to actually quantify the demands of every workout. The energy expended, the glycogen depleted, the amount of stress on your nervous system, and so on, and then create a refeeding or a carb up strategy by the numbers on that basis. The trouble is that could make your nutrition program pretty complicated. Something else to consider is what time of day you train. For example, what if you train late in the evening? Should you start your refeed early that day, even though you don't hit the gym until nighttime? Or would it be more beneficial to eat more starting right after a late night workout and then continue into the next day? Even though the day after may be a non-training day, doesn't the recovery period from that nighttime workout extend into the next day? So the question is, which day should really be the high carb day? The 24 hours before the workout or the 24 hours after? There are important windows of opportunity to attend to, but if you train several times a week, muscle growth and recovery is really a perpetual process. Your muscles don't grow during a workout. They grow after the workout when you're recovering. That includes on the days you're resting. So a certain amount of base nutrition should be taken in every single day, even on the rest days. So you can see that true integration of nutrition to training 100% of the time, it can be taken to a higher level, but it could also make your nutrition plan really complex, hard to follow, and who knows how much more it's going to help. So I think trying to get it perfect and to match the nutrition exactly on every training day, if it's not an exercise in futility, it's just unnecessary. I've used the 3-1 method, the 3-3 method for years in fat loss programs and more recently in the body recomp programs, and it works great. The Holy Grail program, it does integrate nutrition with training by taking advantage of windows of opportunity around training times. On training days, regardless of whether you train in the morning, afternoon, or evening, you just move some of your calories into the post-workout meal, so that becomes one of your larger meals, and it always contains plenty of carbs. You make your pre-workout meal also a pretty substantial meal as well. That gives you fuel before the workout for energy and the nutrients you need after the workout for recovery. This pre and post workout nutrient timing is what I call the bracketing technique. And it's also part of the microcycle, which is the nutrition interventions we do within each day, like on an hour by hour basis. So depending on your calorie budget for the day, you would ideally also take a pretty good breakfast. And for most people, that's important because it gives you appetite control and stable blood sugar levels for the rest of the day. If you really want to take training and nutrition integration to the highest level, then you could definitely go ahead and use that floating high carb days method. The solution to some of these problems I mentioned above, some of these questions that come up, is to just match your higher carb, higher calorie days to your hardest training days. Let me make a specific recommendation on how to do that. First of all, it's really critical to be totally clear about what you want to accomplish. If you have not totally decided on a body transformation goal, then go back to section 1 in the program, pick one of the 4 body composition goals and commit to it. Now, I'm assuming that you want some kind of body recomposition so that you have picked either goal number 3, fat loss, the first priority with a secondary muscle gain goal, or goal number 4, which is a muscle gain priority with fat loss as a secondary goal. If your goal is fat loss as the first priority, muscle gain the second priority, then I recommend that you stay with the 3 days low in a deficit and 1 day high in a surplus. And here's why. If you train 4 days a week and you always eat more at maintenance or in a surplus on every training day, that means you'll only be in a deficit 43% of the time. A maximum fat loss goal requires you to spend more time in a deficit, not less, or it's going to take you a long time to reach your goal. So if fat loss is your highest priority, use the bracketing technique on training days, but don't worry about eating more overall on every training day. If the high day is a training day, that's fine. If the high day is not a training day, that's fine too. If your goal is muscle gain as the first priority and fat loss only as a second priority, then here is where you can use that floating high carb day technique and eat more on training days. Assuming you're training 3 or 4 days a week, your strategy is that on the weight training days, you eat more, eat a surplus, and on the non-training days, you eat less, you eat a deficit. And that's going to give you about half the days of the week in a surplus and half in a deficit. If you train more than 4 days a week, like the bodybuilding splits that I talked about, then just take your higher calorie days only on the workout days that demand the most energy, like back and legs. There's no need for a huge carb up if you're only training small body parts or if the workouts are just low in intensity. This kind of carb targeting is more sophisticated, but I don't think it's 100% vital to always eat more on every training day. It really depends. I've seen excellent results with the 3-3 method, even though some of my training days were low days and some of my rest days were high days. You just have to make sure your pre and post workout nutrition is covered. But if muscle gain is your first priority, go ahead and try eating more, mostly carbs, on all your intense training days and see for yourself how it works. Question. Tom, what do you think about taking some of the low days, but not all of them, on zero carbs? I've seen some carb cycling programs where they vary the amount of carbs, and some days were zero carbs or almost zero carbs, like nothing but green veggies and fibrous carbs. And they said that an occasional zero carb day supposedly increases fat loss compared to just low carbs. What do you think? Answer. I wouldn't be surprised if zero carb days increase fat loss, because if you cut your carbs all the way to zero or close to it, you're cutting more calories. If your calorie intake goes down, regardless of which macronutrient you cut, you're going to lose more fat. But there are downsides of zero carb diets, even if it's only a day here and a day there. There are potential advantages of reducing carbs too, but it's not necessary to be so extreme. Getting leaner mostly is a result of the calorie deficit, plain and simple. So you don't have to reduce carbs to zero to lose more fat. You simply have to increase your calorie deficit. And you could do that by reducing calories overall. And you could do that by doing nothing to the calories you're eating and just increasing your cardio volume. Some of the advantages of cutting calories from carbs to create a larger deficit are, one is it helps control insulin. And that is helpful in getting rid of the last bit of stubborn fat. It can also have metabolic health benefits because some people are carb intolerant. It's an advantage because the low carb diet is naturally higher in protein, and protein is a good appetite suppressant and muscle maintainer. And it's also a lot harder to unconsciously overeat calories if you've restricted an entire calorie dense group of foods. So you could say that cutting a lot of carbs out gives you automatic calorie control. I think that moderate restriction of carbs can be very beneficial. The downsides hit you if you get into a more is better, or in this case, a less is better mentality. I don't like any diets that go to extremes or that remove an entire macronutrient. I think those kind of diets are unbalanced and usually unsustainable. There are rare exceptions, but when your carbs go really low or all the way to zero, most people say they get the brain fog and their energy levels just plummet. And if you don't have the energy to train hard, to train intense at peak levels, your results are going to suffer. There's also the research that says that very low carb diets can actually downregulate your thyroid, and that means you have a slower metabolism. And that obviously defeats the whole purpose of what you're trying to do in the first place. I've seen at least a couple studies that suggest you need somewhere in a ballpark of 100 to 120 grams of carbs a day as a minimum for optimum thyroid function. I also think it's important to mention that cutting out all carbs can lead to some really neurotic thinking. I call it carbophobia. That's where people fear carbs, they demonize carbs, and they get more worried about carbs than calories. The Holy Grail program is really the opposite. It's about learning how and when to use carbs, not to completely eliminate them. What I found is that with moderate carb restriction, you get virtually all the low carb benefits without the low carb downsides. When people ask me to give them a number of how much carbs, I would usually recommend on low carb days, it comes out to somewhere around 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of lean body weight for the low carb days. And that might put a typical guy at about 175 to 200 grams a day. And a typical female might be around 130 to 150 grams a day. Now, I know that low-carb purists would hardly consider that a low-carb diet. But for the active trainee or the physique athlete who's training hard, I think these levels are actually pretty low. But it's enough carbs to get you through your training and keep your head on straight. It's even enough so that you have plenty of carbs to put after your workouts for a nice post-workout meal, even if that's a low-carb day. If you went to zero carbs, then on the training days, you wouldn't be able to properly fuel your workouts or refuel afterwards. If you went to zero carbs, your calories also would probably drop too low for the day, unless you replace some of them with more fat and protein. And we know that a severe calorie deficit can increase the risk of muscle loss and slowing down your metabolism. I don't see anything wrong with experimenting or trying greater carb restrictions on the low days, especially if your goal is focused fat loss or primarily on fat loss. Some people do respond pretty well to a larger carb restriction, but I think you'd be doing more damage than good by going to zero carbs or very low carbs on training days. If you do drop your carbs lower than those numbers that I mentioned, I would recommend that you don't cut them so much that you're even cutting out veggies. You should keep eating plenty of green veggies, salads, and other fibrous carbs. The carbs you cut, the first ones should be the processed sugars, and then you start to cut some of the starchy carbs or grains. If your calories drop too much because of the carbs you dropped, you might need to increase the protein if the drop in carbs puts you in a very aggressive deficit. Bottom line here, avoid going to zero carbs or using protein-only diets. It's just not necessary, and it can do more harm than good. Try making 100 to 120 grams a day a rock-bottom bare minimum. Otherwise, you might just find yourself turning into a low-carb zombie. You'll be in a mental haze all day long. You won't have energy to train, and you're not going to get optimal muscle growth. Question. Isn't there some kind of benefit to staying in a deficit for a while to get into a fat-burning mode and staying in a surplus for a while to get into a muscle-building mode? If so, wouldn't the longer cycles make sense, like the 2 weeks of deficit and the 2 weeks of surplus, or even 3 or 4 week blocks at a time? I'd heard about the ABCDE diet before, and I understand that people complained about gaining fat with that approach, but maybe people were just pigging out on the surplus days. Couldn't you do longer cycles and prevent the fat gain by eating cleaner on the surplus days and keeping the surplus smaller? Answer: yes, I do think that you get into a sort of a groove after a few days on a deficit, or a few days on a surplus compared to raising and lowering calories every other day or at random. That's why I actually prefer staying down for 3 low days before taking a high carb day, 5 low carb days at the most. I also prefer 3-day cycles in a deficit more than longer, like multi-weeks in a deficit, for the reasons that I discussed in my whole program. I don't want that groove to turn into a rut. I don't doubt that all kinds of combinations of low and high cycles could work, including every other day and alternating 1, 2, 3, or 4 week cycles of surplus and deficit. But one thing we definitely don't want is to make an error on the side of staying in a surplus so long that we start to accumulate body fat. If you start to see any kind of significant fat gain during your surplus cycle, then when you switch into your fat loss cycle, you have to spend some of that time burning off the new fat you just gained instead of getting leaner than when you started. And the net effect is you're spinning your wheels and you get nowhere regarding the fat loss side of things. And I think that's where the ABCDE method fell short. Too much fat was gained along with muscle during the surplus phase. I would also agree with you that, yeah, fat gain could be minimized during long surplus cycles by using a more conservative surplus and being sure that you eat clean, really high quality food. That's the approach you would take on a traditional focused muscle gain program. But what we noticed is that even when your surplus is small, the likelihood of gaining fat increases with the length of the surplus. especially if you have the endomorph body type. It's very difficult to stay in a surplus all the time for a long period of time without gaining at least a little bit of fat. I've noticed in particular that when you're in a prolonged surplus, if you cheat in that already overfed anabolic state, the additional surpluses are very, very easily stored as fat. So what happens with this traditional approach to gaining muscle is that you do gain the maximum amount of muscle, but you have to accept a small fat gain along with it. And you're going to have to take that fat off later during the fat loss phase. With the Holy Grail approach, the whole idea is to use very short cycles of surplus and deficit, days long, not weeks or months long. And we usually would spend more time in deficit than surplus. And this approach helps prevent any fat gain in the first place. The trade-off is that muscle gains come more slowly, but you also slowly get leaner and leaner at the same time. It's like taking one slow step at a time, but every step moves you forward towards better body composition. Whereas with the old approach, you take two quick steps forward, but then you take a step back. So the short cycles with the Holy Grail method eliminates that backstepping. Now, the only exception to this is that the Holy Grail approach with short cyclical dieting is not necessary for the skinny ectomorph, hard gainer type of person. If you're an ectomorph body type and you have a lot more difficulty gaining weight than losing it, and your natural tendency is that you've never had a problem storing fat, then I think it makes a lot of sense to stay in a surplus for a longer period of time to maximize your muscle gains. On the other hand, the endomorph would be especially wise not to stay in a surplus for a long time, not even 2 to 4 weeks. The Holy Grail strategies with the 3 days in the deficit low and 1 day high would be a lot more helpful for an endomorph. Question. Tom, thank you for the Holy Grail. I was very happy that someone finally focused on this topic that so many of us are interested in, gaining muscle and losing fat. I was also happy that you talked about getting enough sleep, because I think this is far more important than most people realize. I've heard it's more beneficial to go to bed early and get up early in the morning, so you're sleeping between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., and you maximize the amount of dark hours asleep and light or daytime hours awake. I appreciated that you covered the science behind everything, but I was wondering if you'd seen any research that confirmed this belief about early to bed and early to rise, and whether it could affect our fat losses and muscle gains. Answer. Yes, I have seen research about the benefits of getting exposure to early morning sunlight, the early to rise part, and the early to bed and early to rise go together because you have to go to bed early to get up early and still get enough hours of quality sleep. The one study was published in 2003 in the journal Neuroscience Letters, and they found that luteinizing hormone was increased after bright light exposure. And what they did is they woke up one group of subjects at 5 a.m. and exposed them to bright light. They had a 69.5% increase in luteinizing hormone compared to the placebo light group, which did not. And the luteinizing hormone drives up testosterone levels in men. So theoretically, testosterone could be enhanced with the extra hours of bright light exposure. There's a lot of people, though, in the bodybuilding and fitness community that immediately connect increased testosterone for any reason with increased muscle size and strength. But we're not always sure whether a transient spike in testosterone or growth hormone will have a direct effect on increasing muscle mass unless the researchers actually measure it. For example, in this one study, the body composition wasn't measured. They were just measuring hormone levels in response to the light. But what I can tell you is that one of the study authors, Dr. Daniel Kripke, said what was really of much more interest to Dr. Kripke, who actually is a psychiatrist at the University of San Diego, was the effects of light on mood and depression. Because there's a condition that's called seasonal affective disorder, SAD, and that has been studied a lot by psychologists and psychiatrists. And some people call it the winter blues, but it's actually a lot more than that. It's actually a type of depression. And it happens during short days and long nights of winter and in the fall when there's a lot less sunlight and colder temperatures. And the symptoms include depression, cravings for specific foods, especially carbs, a loss of energy, feelings of hopelessness, and oversleeping. And these types of symptoms and behaviors can affect whether you lose or gain fat in just about every way possible, through the amount of calories you consume, the amount of calories you burn, motivational factors, hormones, and so on. Just about everybody today accepts that sleep deprivation is a risk factor for obesity, but it does look like getting maximum exposure to sunlight does have benefits of its own. Maybe that's why Southern California was always the mecca of bodybuilding, all those days of sunshine. Question. I'm a 40-year-old male, 200 pounds, and somewhere between 27 and 30% body fat. In part one of the Holy Grail, after you redefined the possible goals, you mentioned that an overweight person should focus strictly on fat loss. No secondary goal, just fat loss. But you also mentioned that newbie gains can account for a person sometimes having near equal gains in muscle and losses in fat over an extended period. I feel like I'm in both categories, newbie and overweight. So I'm left wondering if I should start fresh with a singular focus on fat loss, like you suggested, or whether I should try to cash in on those newbie muscle gains before switching to a single goal of fat loss. Answer. If I'm understanding your question correctly, you're wondering if you start on a fat loss program and stay focused on fat loss for 12 weeks or more, that by the time you finish the fat loss phase, you won't be a beginner anymore. So I can see how that's an interesting question. My answer is the standard advice. If you have high body fat, start with fat loss first. There's very few exceptions to that rule. That's because when you have high body fat, muscle loss is much less of a concern than when you're already lean and you want to get leaner. And when your body fat is high and you go into a prolonged calorie surplus, it's actually easier to gain fat along with the muscle because of your existing high body fat levels. You don't need to be concerned about missing out on newbie gains, because newbie gains doesn't refer to how many months or years of training you've accumulated. When it comes to muscle growth, newbie gains means the first pounds of new muscle you gain, not how long you've been weight training per se. So even if you focus on fat loss for 6 months, and then at that point, you'd usually be considered well out of the beginner stage, but you still haven't put on that first 10 or 12 pounds of muscle yet. And when you start on a muscle gain phase for the first time, I predict that you'll still get that newbie spurt of muscle growth, and you'll find that the first 10 to 12 pounds of muscle is fairly easy to put on, regardless of whether you do it now or 3 months from now or 6 months from now. You're no longer a newbie in muscle gaining terms after you've already gained a sizable amount of muscle. So once you have got that first, say, 10 to 12 pounds of pure lean body mass, then adding the next 10 to 12 pounds of lean body mass, that's going to be a lot more difficult. And once you've put on a good 20 to 25 pounds, then the natural gains start to come really slowly because the honeymoon period of newbie gains is over. So if your body fat's high now, pour your mental focus and your physical effort into getting lean. Focused fat loss, make that your goal. Once your body fat's down to average or better, then switch gears and go into your focused muscle building cycle, or at least primary muscle gain and secondary fat loss. You'll be a lot less likely to add fat when you're adding muscle to an already lean body. And I think you'll find the first spurt of muscle growth is still going to be there for you to enjoy.